Let me tell you a fun fact. Within the last two centuries, more than 90% of the world's millionaires have been created by investing in real estate. But if done incorrectly, without the right knowledge, required skills, or partners, it can also create a ton of problems and a lot of sleepless nights. You feel like sometimes there are way too many gurus out there trying to sell you on a weekend course or just too much noise to cut right to the facts? Yup. We did too, and this is why we started this podcast. Our goal is to provide real estate investors, entrepreneurs, and enthusiasts with all of the most recent knowledge, secrets, tips, tricks, and tactics so that you can grow your own portfolios, increase your returns, net worth, and most importantly, create generational wealth for you and your loved ones. Remember, this is your real estate career. Information is your sword and shield. So eat hearty, prepare for battle, and grind your way to victory. My name is Tejas Gosai. I'm joined by my partner, Jeremy Moyer, and we welcome you to the Real Estate Investor MBA podcast.
Hey guys, we just came out of an awesome interview with Vince Young and Mike Maurer, right, Tejas?
Amazing, amazing. And I mean, super informative. Having a valuation guy from an administration for a private equity fund is wild.
Absolutely. I mean, it's something that, you know, I would say most of us, you know, operator, at least the operator mindset is like assets acquisition, asset management. It's not the fund administration and accounting and compliance, like that's just
boring stuff.
Think about, right? You know, yeah. But you need to think about it. It's all really important, especially whenever you're dealing with anybody else's money, right? The compliance and legality and the accounting behind it. So it was really cool kind of picking their brain, you know, during this interview, just to kind of see where their thoughts are on one, the industry, and then also just how everything kind of works.
Yeah. And as, you know, new time investor or somebody who's just getting in or looking to get in, you know, hearing the data and tech parts of these things, you know, these are things you got to think about yourself too. There's a reason that there's valuations. There's a reason you look at comps. There's a reason you get a plus or minus in certain areas of the city and all those fun things that private equity fund world deals with. But, you know, you this is a lot of great education. Take your career in real estate seriously. I think you'll enjoy it.
Absolutely. Take care, guys.
Cheers. Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. It's Tejas Gosai, my partner, Jeremy Moyer. And we are, as always, super appreciative of everyone who has made our program possible. I'd like to say this started out as a COVID project, right, Jeremy?
That's right. Yep.
And it's really taken a lot of steam. We just recently had a program with another one with Meenal about Biden and what's going on with some of the tax implications. And then we just had a podcast on seven different alternatives to 1031s.
Yes.
Which was really, really great. So you can find all this online, YouTube, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Podomatic, all over. Thank you, Jeremy, for syndicating. And so, yeah, we're having a lot of fun. We're continuing this series of behind the curtain of a private equity fund, or, you know, look behind the curtain. So super excited to have you guys here. Cheers. And we'll get cooking.
Joining us today is Vince Young and Mike Maurer. So Vince has over 20 years of experience in the financial services industry and partnership accounting, with the latest 5 years focused on real estate. Prior to joining FD Fund Administration, he held the position of controller for a multi-billion dollar real estate family of funds, overseeing the accounting and reporting for several of their real estate partnerships with over $2 billion in commitments. Early in his career, Vince was a CFO and chief compliance officer for an investment advisor with over $800 million in assets under management. And Mike has over 20 years of experience in finance and analytics, including 9 years in commercial real estate and 5 in private equity. Prior to joining FD Fund Administration, he was a director of valuations and analytics functions for a multi-billion dollar real estate family of funds. Mike also held various roles with Capmark Financial Group, which is formerly GMAC Commercial Mortgage, and its global treasury and financial planning and analysis groups. Early in his career, he led accounting and risk management operations in telecommunications, technology, and healthcare sectors. Vince and Mike, thanks so much for your time this afternoon joining us.
Sure. Thanks for having us. Glad to be here.
That was a pretty tremendous background. I don't know, Dave, what do you think?
That's a lot to unpack. I would like to continue the intro for a second. As many of you know, we got a Regulation D private equity fund off the ground called the Lehigh Valley Private Equity Fund. And it's really fun. You know, this was a lot of Jeremy's ideas. Hey, why don't we share all these little details? People are so curious as to how to syndicate money and what a private equity fund is and how it adapts to real estate. So FD is actually our designated fund administration group, which is very exciting. And obviously with the bios, we have a lot to get into. But yeah, thanks again. Vince, so why don't we start off with some easy stuff? Vince, if you want to just, you know, tell us a little bit about FD. Mike, if you want to get in there too, just tell us more about your company.
Sure. So FD Fund Administration, or FDFA, has been around 8 years. We started in 2013. At that time, we were about 13 people. We were all part of the back office of a large Philadelphia real estate firm. And at that time, we got, you know, as part of an uplift, we got taken in by Fraser Dieter in Atlanta, who is a CPA firm, and they were looking to get kind of a leg into the Northeast market. And they had dealt with us. They do a lot of audits of the properties that this client owns. So they kind of knew our name and it seemed like a good match since we kind of knew their history. They knew our history. So we formed FD Fund Administration. And like I said, at the time, it was 13 people. The one client was our first client and only client for about a year, as we kind of got up to speed with what we were doing and what we were all about. You know, 8 years later, we're, you know, up to 24 clients, about $23 billion in commitments, 75 employees located in Philadelphia, New York, and Minneapolis. We have a good mix of private equity and real estate clients. That's really our niche right now and the background we brought to it. You know, we offer a full set of fund accounting skills. You know, we do the accounting, we do the IR work, the investor relations, dealing with the investors, using portals to share the information. Mike's group, which I'll talk to a little bit, is a valuation group, which I think is kind of unique to our firm, that they work with the clients and help valuing what their assets they hold. So I think that's a nice little extra skill set we bring to clients when they use us. So at a high level, that's what we do. We're basically a full service fund administrator focused on real estate and private equity.
Awesome. Thanks for that, Vince. Mike, go for it.
Yeah, good overview, Vince. With regards to valuations, every quarter we review clients' assets and just for mark-to-market purposes, which if you think back over 10 years ago with FAS 157, now it's ASC 820, we try to help clients with their valuation with quarterly reports. And we review every asset depending on the frequency desired by the client, either quarterly, semi-annually, or annually. And we help with the annual audits too, just to take a lot of pressure off the asset managers and let them do what they do best.
Very interesting. I kind of want to take a step back. Just, I think for our listeners, we have a kind of like a whole, I would say, gamut of investors, I would say, Tejas, right? We have new investors, we have a bunch of syndicators. I know we've talked to quite a few talking about interest in starting a fund. So more applicability of, you know, what's in it for the listener, right? What they can take away from this podcast episode. What exactly is a fund administrator? I think it might be a first good question if they've never heard of the term before. You know, what we talk about compliance, you guys talk about valuations, accounting, like one-off asset syndications, do they use companies like yourself, or is it more multi-asset funds that need services as such?
We would tend to focus on multi-asset. So, you know, short term, we're basically the accounting function for a person. So, you know, if you don't want to have the back office infrastructure to close the books, to do the bank recs, to coordinate capital calls and distributions, to deal with auditors, to, you know, deal with investors when they have questions, like, you want to come to us, so we can do all that for you. So the accounting team, which I work on, we will, do your bank recs. We will close your books quarterly. Like, we will work with Mike on the valuations to record that. We will, handle the processing of capital calls and distributions in terms of working up the allocations, and working with the investor relations team to draft the letters that would go out. So basically, anything that you don't want to do other than focus on making deals and making money for yourself, we will take that off your plate and work with you that way. So again, it's really just, when we got taken out of this firm in Philadelphia, I think a lot of institutional investors like the separation of duties. Like, you're the asset manager, we hired you to manage our money. We want to keep that separate from who's doing the books and accounting for that information. So it's a good kind of independence break. And so that's kind of been the trend over the last few years. So, but in a nutshell, anything that you would not want to do accounting related around the numbers, we will help you with.
Yeah, I think it's important too to highlight the independence factor, Vince, because especially with the valuation perspective, is oftentimes asset management can have a specific view of what the value should be or might be, and this kind of, we bump everything against market comps and market rates, and this kind of, we work with asset managers closely, obviously, just to understand the assets and the nature of where the asset is and its stage. But it gives a good reasonableness and really helps with the year-end audits, honestly, because, when the auditors come in and say, well, how'd you come up with the value? Then we can, me and my team, we can talk to it, pretty easily.
Let me jump. Go ahead.
Sorry, tied to that, we'll provide the system. So we have the accounting systems that we use to do your work. We have portals that we use to provide information to the investors, which are secure. So there's less investment on your side in software and the infrastructure to do that. Like, we'll take care of all that for you.
I'll jump in. So to get a little bit more granular, like in the beginning of what you were saying, Vince, like just mentioning, quarterly and just these terms are extremely complicated when you look at the math and the minutia. And I think a lot of people don't understand that in the world of private equity. You are abiding by a serious amount of, legal rules, data validation, going and finding a property and everything from the root level is really, really complicated. And it's very difficult to function. Luckily, I have a partner who's been in the private equity fund space for over 10 years. So I can't even imagine somebody who would start from scratch and go and try to build a private equity fund and have the trust factor of, hey, are you going to do this the right way? So for the listeners and folks that are hearing this, you guys are like the other side of the battery for, millions and hundreds of millions of dollars. And to be able to run properly and back these private equity funds, it's really about growth, trust, and making sure the customers know what's going on. And so to be able to have that open book transparency really gets rid of a lot of that, concern of like, hey, what are they doing with our money? Or, hey, I wonder if I should put money into this thing with this group that's doing this. And I just want to mention, those pieces. It's very, very complicated. So you need a company like you to be able to do this. The Excel sheets would be insane. But just wanted to comment on that.
Yeah, a lot of investors now, institutional investors and even other type of investors now are asking a lot of us in terms of like compliance and cybersecurity and privacy. What are you doing to make sure that my information isn't being shared, that it's not getting out there, that the systems are secure, that when information is being shared, that it's not, just something in the news about cybersecurity and attacks. Like, there's a lot of pressure to make sure you're meeting those demands. And investors are asking more of what they want to see now, timely reporting, the detail in the reporting. Like, there's a lot of work around providing regular, timely reporting to investors about, okay, this money I'm getting, what's that made up from, what my tax information. There's a lot of things they're asking and a lot of questions they might have. And it's always easier to be able to say, well, I'll direct you to this person at FDFA because they can handle that for you.
So how important, I guess, maybe for listeners who want or thinking about starting a fund, because we always hear from people that have ever brought it up. They're like, it'd be nice to have more money available in a fund than when I want to buy an asset. It's more on the asset acquisition, asset management side. It's never really I want to start a fund because I want to do all this math on the back end, right? So that's kind of like where you guys come in. Like, so from an operator perspective, and then also maybe if someone's looking to passively invest, like how important is it that there is a third party group like yourselves to do the tracking of the valuations, to do the compliance, to do all that back end paperwork versus like an internal team doing it themselves? Like, do you see groups that do both or either or?
I think it's always good to have someone internal from accounting just so we have a contact. So, I mean, it's always good to have someone in the in-house who understands the numbers and who is owning, you know, financials and what's being prepared. And then we're there to help them. So, you know, you'd want someone in-house who understands the process. And, you know, when we do things, we're still saying to someone at the client to approve, like, you know, so you want someone who's knowledgeable and can speak to what we're talking about in terms of GAAP, tax information, anything around there. It's really meant to be like, rather than investing in a huge back office that would just drain resources from your main goal, is that's where we kind of step in. Like, we want to deal with someone who's in-house, who understands everything and is involved in the process, but it's more about saving the total investment into infrastructure that you might need to really fully service a large fund with all the requirements that come around it. You know, we get a lot of questionnaires when we get take on new funds or investors are trying to come into a fund, like large questionnaires about security and IT and all the things around it. So it's a lot of work when you're first starting to satisfy people who are looking to give you money. So you can do it independently with a firm that's well known. It definitely helps the process, in my
opinion. I'll jump in next. Go ahead, Mike.
No, I was just going to say that the work isn't done in a vacuum. We work closely with the contacts, like Vince says, and it, with the clients, and like specifically with valuation, we have a valuation committee designated at the with the client, each client, and we work with them to we discuss every asset, and if there's anything that we missed or that we may not be aware of, then we definitely will know at that point in time and incorporate it.
I want to talk about something fun here. Can you share some stories about a newer fund or somebody that started working with you, and you know, maybe there wasn't a valuation team, and you know, you had to take them from where they were or where they wanted to get to, and how that looked
From a valuation perspective?
Well, I mean, just in general, like, give me a success story of how FD has helped some of these funds get from a million to 10 million. I'm sure, you know, you have some good stories.
Well, I will say this, a lot of the success depends on them as well. Like, some of our big successes are because the fund did great. You know, like, you know, we had a newer client who was relatively small, but the fund, you know, it's nice being in tandem with the client. Like, they really rely on us for what we bring to them, and we enjoy starting out with a new fund and watching them grow, hoping that, you know, we can kind of grow along with them in that way. But a lot of the successes are really tied to that fund doing a great job of finding great assets and making money for everybody. But where we get the benefit is when we're, you know, they look to us for advice on, you know, even just writing the investor letter or setting up the controls in place of the portal that they should be using to communicate to their investors. Like, smaller ones usually come to us with a blank template of like, okay, what should we use to communicate, and what, you know, the format of the financials. Like, we'll do the initial drafting of financials for a new client and writing the footnotes and going through the docs and incorporating that. So I think it's just a joint effort. When you work with a group that we feel like we add real value in helping them get started, and then they, because of their intelligence and knowledge around the assets, that we both kind of grow together. That's, you know, that's when it becomes fun, because then it's like both going off at the same time together, and both becomes a long-term relationship that can last a while.
It's awesome. When, like, can you just touch on, is there like a newer fund that came to you like a year before COVID or just before COVID, and how has that type of stuff affected your industry?
We had a fund that started in 19, so right about, you know, before we really went into shutdown mode. And it was nice to see that we could, you know, we all did, you know, accounting luckily is a industry that did well in COVID because it was easy. We have systems that are in the cloud. We can access things remotely. You know, Zoom and Microsoft Teams, you're able to have face-to-face contact with the client or staying in touch with their own team. So, you know, that fund started right when it kind of hit. And a lot of their investor letters were like based around like, you know, even with COVID, we're still doing well, and it's like, take it a slow approach and see where it goes. And so it was, you know, not that anybody enjoyed COVID, but we showed that we could do well in it. You know, we happened right during the busy season, so we were doing a lot of audits and tax returns were going out the door. So everything got done timely and accurately. So we survived it and showed that, I mean, it's nice to be in the office and see your coworkers and have face-to-face meetings with clients and, you know, but it definitely did well even during COVID, and there's not a thing that was dropped. Things were met on time, accurately, and went smoothly. So
it's nice. Awesome. I think a lot of folks that made it are, you know, obviously a lot stronger, but everyone had to learn a bunch, and then your assets and your friends became a trillion times more important last year. I'll ask one more and then Jeremy, you can go, but Mike, how about your valuation world? How, you know, was that rocked last year? Can you share some of your insights?
Yeah, it was initially the hit was pretty big. I mean, retail, hospitality got hit more than anything. But surprisingly, apartments, multifamily we thought that might take a little hit too, but it really didn't. Office took somewhat of a hit. Industrial did not. Industrial was fine. But we're seeing hospitality and retail kind of coming back now. And a lot of the publications and podcasts that I listen to are really talking to that, on how surprising it is that hospitality is coming back. One story there I'll tell you is I know of an auction where a hotel in suburban Philadelphia was at auction for 3.2, and it ended up selling like north of 12, I believe, at the end of the auction. And
wow.
It was extremely surprising. It went for that much.
Was that on like 10X or?
It was on 10X, yeah.
Yeah.
And Mike, you can speak to this too, but I think some of our clients viewed COVID as an opportunity. Like if you had liquidity to go out there and could help people, there was good deals to be made if you were the person that came in with the cash to help them kind of get through the rough patch. Like there was deals that might not have been there pre-COVID.
Absolutely.
If the market hadn't kind of leveled out a little bit.
So happy you
said that. Once you bought the properties before COVID and just said, we're going to stick to the plan anyway, and just kept plowing through, those were the big success stories that we're seeing now.
That's awesome. Jeremy.
So I guess a technical question. So how complex is, I guess, calculating or figuring out the valuations within a fund when you have multiple assets, maybe in multiple different phases, I guess you can say, or maybe it doesn't even matter if it's in multiple phases, especially when new money is coming in and money is leaving. So I guess, like, I don't know if that's the calculation of how much those shares are worth, depending on how the company is set up. How complicated is it, and how do you go about calculating that?
Well, short answer, Barry.
If we're just talking, if we're talking real estate, then we have a standard model. Of course, we adjust the standard model to every asset, depending on the nature of the asset and what the components, because some are just a simple, you know, like the hotel I described, it's a, you know, 227 key hotel. And that's fairly easy to model up and analyze. When you're talking about a multi-asset, piece of property that has, you know, 750 entitlements for multifamily, it has, you know, 100,000 for retail, 50,000 office. They're different components. You just got to kind of compartmentalize them. And I think about it where you break things into silos. And if you can keep things in, it doesn't matter how many silos you have. You just kind of manage what you have in the silo. And you, as long as you can compartmentalize assets from that point of view and that perspective, things just kind of work their way out. And because we do bump assets in locations against each other. We'll look at hotels in Chicago all against each other and the office buildings in Chicago and kind of say, all right, is this reasonable? Why is one higher than the other on a per square foot or per key basis? But it really comes down to just breaking everything down. And if you think of it from a mathematical proof point of view, which is kind of part of my background, is that you got to break it all down to the nuts and bolts, and then you got to build it back up. And if you can do that, then your proof works. And if you can do that with these models, then the valuation will work too. And I know it's kind of a weird way of putting it, but that's really what it comes down to. Compartmentalizing, breaking it down, building it back up.
Bite-sized pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy, you got any follow-up? I got
no, not on that one.
Okay.
No.
I'm a hotel guy through and through. I built $60 million worth of hotels for investors. I had a really great run in my 20s. And then I moved over to Lehigh Valley and restarted. But, you know, I didn't expect to talk about hotel valuations, but you must see some crazy things if you've been doing this for clients in the hotel space over the past 2-3 years, because it was gangbusters. And then the occupancy goes from 100 to 20, and then your ADR and your comp set and all that crazy stuff is insane. Just as somebody who really knows the hotel world, you know, are there private equity funds that you've worked with that are like solely hotel? Is it, you know, how did these guys function? And was it just a waiting game to try to see what happens?
Yeah, it was a waiting game. It was part of the PPP program, leveraging that and just pumping more money into the projects that were worthwhile and in good locations. Like, with the hotels that are not in great locations, you know, I don't want to say that they were given up on, because they certainly weren't, but the focus was put less on those and more on the hotels that were thought to ride out the storm and weather it.
Awesome. Well, on the fun part of this, let's look at some, you know, predictions or projections. Now, we've talked a little bit about COVID. We know what you guys are doing. You clearly are great economic indicators of, you know, what may or may not happen. But what do you think is going to happen in the next 6 months, year, industry-wise or real estate? You guys are all over the country. We value your opinion if you don't mind sharing.
I'll defer to Mike on this one first.
All right.
He's the valuation guru, so that's why I brought him.
Well, I think it depends on where the treasuries go and the risk-free rates. I mean, if those stay down low where they are, then we're going to see multifamilies continue to just, you know, see, in some cases, sub 3 cap rates, which is, you know, something I don't think anybody ever thought we'd see.
Scary.
If that comes back up, if it starts inching up, like, you know, a lot of the people in the curve, that they think the curve's going up that way a little bit. And I think we're going to see, you know, a little bit of compression, but multifamily is going to be strong. Industrial is probably going to stay pretty strong. Hospitality and retail, and it depends on location. What's left? Office. I don't know. I don't have a good read on office yet. I think that we might see some conversions from the office buildings, depending on locale too.
Awesome.
You want to break that like suburban, urban?
Yeah, if we're looking at downtown locations for office is what I'm talking about. Like, okay. I think we might be able to see some of the, you know, re-entitling of some of that space, or even, you know, converting some of it to first floor retail and then building on top. We've seen a couple of those with our clients where they've done that.
Well, real quick, do you deal with like cold storage and, you know, self storage, any of this type of stuff?
Cold storage. I mean, it's weird how storage is becoming so hot, because honestly, I don't use it. I don't know too many people who do. And not to like put down using it, but I'm just saying it. I don't understand like why you build it and it just, people just like to store things. It's especially in Florida, that seems to be a pretty hot location. Tampa area seems to be doing well with want to call it South Florida, seems to be good, especially with the colder, the temperature controlled storage.
Sure.
Oh, we're a country of hoarders, so it's only a matter of time. You need some space, you know.
I guess.
Get the toilet paper.
That's right. Hey,
you have enough baseball cards for a while. There.
Right. Vince, how about you?
I'll defer Mike on the bat. I mean, like I said, multifamily has been strong for a long time in the funds we've been working on. So that seems to be something that just seems to have legs, you know, and I guess a lot of it depends on COVID too. Like if we keep having, like, when will people start feeling comfortable going back to work again, and how will that impact, you know, especially like office, like, you know, will people be looking to expand office space? Probably not. You know, they're probably trying to make do with what they have. I mean, I talked to some people who work for other firms, and they said they went in and they had 8 floors and now they're down to 4, just because they're not expecting that many people to come in. So they're trying to condense to save a little bit. So, you know, I think we felt like we were getting out of the darkness of COVID. Now it's like, well, maybe we are, maybe we're not. So I think there's still wiggle room in how it's going to move. So, I think it's gonna be a lot of wait and see, you know, and see how things go through the next 6 months. And then hopefully by then there's more of a past certain how things are going to go, and people can start making decisions with more certainty, I think.
Agreed. We need some consistency.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a different topic every day. Even for us discussing when we're coming back in, like last week, I would have told you this. This week, I'm like, you know, it just seems to be a constantly evolving place and time. So
my favorite quote, in chaos, there are ladders. You'll make it if you can survive.
The only constant is change, so we should be used to it.
There you go. Awesome. Well, amazing. Amazing information. You guys are super authoritative, and you know your stuff. So it's really wonderful to have you guys on the program. But Mike, Vince, awesome. Let me pull that website up real quick. Here's how you can get a hold of these guys. They're wonderful. Our private equity fund, it has committed to them. You now know why, which is really exciting. And Jeremy, thanks for coming up with the idea to do this type of program. It's pretty fun.
Absolutely. Yep.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Vince. Check us out on the internet. We're all over the place. And some people have been sending us topics and things to share. Please keep doing that. And if there's anyone that you think we should interview, we'd love that opportunity. It's Real Estate Investor MBA. I'm Tejas Gosai. I'm a partner, Jeremy Moyer. We'll check you out next time.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
See you.